Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Sandick here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Today, what do I got for you today? It's the day after the season ender. Bummer on that front. Was at Wizards today. Exit interviews for the players before they all head off to wherever they're going for the summer. Who'd we talk to today? Basically, all the main rotation guys. Including Brandon Jennings, but obviously John Wall, Scott Brooks, Bradley Beal, Morris, Otto Porter, etc. Over the next, couple weeks or so, I will poly for you guys. I mean, Brooks alone went 20-something minutes. Wall went, pretty long. Same with Beal. So over the course of the next few weeks, I'll play some different clips from some of those different interviews for you guys and come up with some different topics in that way. So you may read about some stuff here and there from other reporters who were at exit interview day as well, but you'll hear the audio and I'll let you know what I think about things that were said. And that said, we're not gonna wait forever to discuss this. So on the podcast today, I spoke earlier with our boy Todd Dybas from the Washington Times, and first time Locked On Wizards podcast guest Ava Wallace from the Washington Post. They were both there, and they were at Game 7, so we talked a little bit about that and got there. We sort of touched on what we thought were the highlights of today. So I'll get all that for you here in just a second. Before I do that, I just want to say really thank you so much to all the people that showed up for the event at Public Bar on Monday night. It was so cool to have people there. I've mentioned some of the names already, but on yesterday's podcast, but just to have people come up to me and say, hey, I listen to the podcast, and I'm not going to lie, when I'm sitting here doing it right now, I think nobody's listening. I'm just doing this, and it's going out into the world, and as somebody said to me last night, they said that, when you're a Wizards fan in this town, you feel like there's nobody else who's feeling your, living your life, feeling your pain, whatever it may be. And that on some level, at least, the podcast may have been maybe a voice or a source or a connection for people. And if that's the case, I'm definitely glad to help. I know for me, I've always been extremely frustrated when I know a lot of the guys in the radio game in town, and when I, or even with the TV side or different websites and such, and I'm always like, why don't you guys talk more Wizards? And they always say, well, when we open up the phone lines, nobody calls. And I'm always like, yeah, but they don't know to call. Like, you guys don't talk about them with any consistency. I mean, maybe they did a little bit more now as we got into the playoffs, but generally speaking, there isn't that. And I think that's one of the reasons why it seemed to make some sense for me to, or for this daily podcast to exist. We did it. 200-something episodes later, we're still doing it. And just to clarify that point, and I'm going to get to the interview here in just a second, in case I was vague about it last night, I'm not going away. I'm still going to keep doing this podcast. I suspect at this point instead of doing it 7 days a week the way I have been doing it, I'll probably dial it back a little bit for now, maybe, sort of in the 4 to 5 day range for now, and then we'll see what happens as we get a little bit further down the line. I want to exhaust sort of all the topics we have now with the season ending and whatever possible news is coming out of here and so on. And then, but look, we'll have time. The Wizards told us today that the draft workouts will probably start probably the beginning of June. So again, they only have a second round pick, but either way, they'll start bringing in prospects. You never know. So we'll get into that, and then of course free agency starts when the new right after when the new year the new business year starts July 1st. So there'll be a lot of that, and got some other tricks up my sleeve as well as some guests I want to get on and some topics to touch base. I mean, now that we're not unfortunately not burdened by an actual game, it gives me more flexibility to deal with to go down some other avenues, and we'll see what happens. So lots more to go. Definitely appreciate you guys being part of this. If you were just learning about the podcast, of course, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else you do your podcasting. You can also follow us on Twitter at Locked On Wizards or at Ben Standing. And I don't think I mentioned in the episode itself. So for Todd, of course, it's Todd underscore Dybus. For Ava, it's at Ava R. Wallace. All right, let's get into this. Here's what we all had to say about the season ending and the exit interviews. All right, Wizards just officially ended all their exit interviews, or at least all the ones that we got to talk to. We didn't actually get to sit on the exit interviews. We just got to ask questions after they did their thing. So now we're going to talk about what we talked about. Todd Dybus is here. I already know him, and making her podcast debut, Miss Ava Wallace. Ava, are you excited about this moment? Is this the official highlight of your basketball season?
Not just excited, but I think honored is the word. And I'm glad. I've been underappreciated, so I'm glad that you're finally bringing me on.
Are you the Marching Gortat?
I am the Marching Gortat of the Wizards press corps. Dove right in there. Yikes.
All right. So you guys were actually up in Boston. I guess before we put a bow on that, I talked about the podcast, or I talked about the game on last night on the podcast from your perspective, actually being in the arena. Why? I don't even know where to begin. It feels like to say, like, why did they lose? I feel like we've already, on some level, I feel like I've already moved on in my head, but I guess ultimately, Todd, like, what was your biggest takeaway from last night, either about that game or the series as a whole?
I think it was just the margin for error. It felt like the Wizards were in control in the third quarter. They said that after the fact, that they thought the same. It seemed like the Celtics also thought that at the time. Then a Marcus Smart three, of all things, kind of started the beginning of the end there. Bad close of the quarter, bad start to the fourth. Even though there's a rally, there wasn't much meat there. So they end up going home once again on the same date, in the same round. Same situation.
I mean, the same date thing is crazy with three
it
out of four
wild.
Years, right?
Yeah,
May
yeah.
15th, 3 out of 4 years. And as John Wall, when you asked John Wall about it, if he knew that, he's like, yeah, I saw the tweet.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd said in the past that he had marked that date on the calendar, and then it came back to bite him again this season. It's pretty amazing, despite the fact that they went to seven games. So, yeah, it was just the tension of that. And the whole Kelly Olynyk thing, for me, forever, will be one of the greatest outliers I've ever seen in a pivotal sports moment.
What did Brooks call him? The come-out-of-nowhere guy?
Yeah.
Like, that was exactly, like,
right.
Exactly, I mean, what it was, and no one knew how to
14 points in the fourth quarter of a Game 7 for the arguably the most storied franchise in a league to go on and face LeBron. Why did you lose? Kelly Olynyk.
Right. And what? Bradley Beal was the only one there to have anything to combat him. John Wall didn't have anything. And it was just Brad
John
Beal
looked,
and him in a
John
shootout.
John looked gassed, for sure, by the end of that game.
And so, and to that point, the conversation when I got back in my car last night looking at Twitter driving home, I got in my car listening to Sirius Radio, and Mitch Lawrence was on, the guy who said the Wizards were dying to sign Joakim Noah to a max contract this year. He was on there saying that John Wall was basically screwed up his legacy. This is a game where legacies are made, and he screwed his up, and he gave the Wizards nothing. And I'm like, okay, he missed the last 11 shots. There's no, what can you say about that? That's not good. If to give him an excuse, if such a thing is to give him one, first of all, the game before he hits the game-winning shot, so they're not here if he doesn't make that. So he was also making the point that he wasn't ready for the moment, which I thought was stupid. But it felt like to me this game was a microcosm of the season because they didn't have enough of a bench.
Defense.
One of the first times all year, it felt like Scott Brooks almost got out of character for what he'd been doing all the year. It is a game seven, so I get it. But he went to the starters so much that Wall, in particular, seemed to have nothing left in the end. They played crazy minutes.
And so I was curious, from as you guys were watching it, especially like as you're, I don't know if you're watching them during timeouts, could you just see it? I mean, on the court, it was clear he was tired, but could you like sense it body language wise that he just wasn't there?
Yeah, he looked exhausted, and it's like you're watching Brad Beal take his shots, and he's, you know, that's what he does. He's catch and shoot. That's natural for him. But John Wall, they completely clog the paint, so he can't do what's natural to him. So he's also laboring to take. It was the one pull-up jumper, and the three threes in the fourth quarter were the only shots he had, and that. Like that in itself takes a lot out of him for him to be able to do that and then to just be running up and down the court all game. And Scott Brooks said he went to them and they said that they were okay to play, but what else are they going to say?
Right. And I think one of the pivotal things is that they were playing the Celtics, who can pass both those guys around to fantastic perimeter defenders. You either deal with Avery Bradley, fantastic hands, good length, good athleticism. Marcus Smart, built like a, I don't
know. He's a running
safety.
Back.
Yeah, yeah. Safety, a running back, fantastic hands. Also, he's intent on taking you out of what you do, which is half a defense, as we've seen time and again. If you don't have that ambition to start with, it's not really something a coach can create for you, especially at this level. So going between those guys, and sometimes even if they got a switch, then you're running into Jay Crowder. That makes for a lot of body damage, a lot of fatigue over the course of seven games at the end of a long season when there was no backup point guard play in any consistent manner. Once again, this is like the Redskins not being able to find a safety all these years. I feel like it's the same with finding a good young backup to be consistent behind Wall has been the major chore for this organization, and at some point they need to figure out how to fix that.
And you said it was a microcosm of the season. I thought we saw the exact same thing with the defense in the third quarter. It felt like there was just, they had their largest lead of the game, right? 6 points in the third quarter, and it was just literally a few minutes of defensive lapses in the tied 72 all, and it was kind of gone from there after that Smart three and then Isaiah Thomas with the two.
Yeah, and that was they had to put in Jason Smith because of some foul trouble, and then they had quickly had a botched coverage there, and that led to Isaiah's first three. So me and Ava are going to continue to talk while Ben goes and coughs in another room.
Coughs a long time. You were there for Jennings. Were you there when he was talking?
Yes.
So what did he, speaking of backup point guards, what did he say? What were his thoughts on the season and his role and stuff
well,
like that?
It was interesting that he volunteered a pretty harsh self-assessment. When he called himself a no-show in the Boston series. He said he played terrible. And then he went on to explain that he was seeing a lot of different guards, which, as we were just talking about, is what Boston has at their disposal.
Right.
Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, or even Isaiah Thomas at times for Jennings. So he felt like he wasn't really in a rhythm. He wasn't always on the primary ball handler. He would be off the ball, which is kind of out of character. And certainly he's at a massive size disadvantage if he doesn't have Isaiah Thomas or Terry Rozier even in front of him, and instead would have Smart or Bradley or someone like that, even though those instances were rare. It was good to hear his frank and accurate assessment of how the series went for him. It didn't go well. At least he admitted it. I thought that him as an experiment as a whole here was kind of strange. He seemed to try to remake himself into just a tempo controller and a pass-first guy when he's been at his best in this league when being aggressive, kind of a bit of a loose cannon offensively, but that's also what has served him well and kept him around for several years.
And that's why Brooks said he always wanted the pass-first guy in that backup role, someone who could also work with John, and we saw him do that so much in the playoffs. Not always successfully, but I just thought it was interesting. That's exactly what Brooks has said he's always wanted, and it's not worked out that well for them.
I hated that pairing during the regular season of Wall and Jennings. I hated it more in the playoffs. I just wish they had. And I don't entirely blame Scott Brooks for that. You know what? Before I forget, I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast on the flight home this morning. And one really interesting thing that he was talking about on there with Sam Amick from USA Today is that some of the player minute studies that have been coming out, like Houston, who always gets credit from that crowd, Daryl Morey, one of Ben's favorite NBA narratives is how great Daryl Morey does everything. And also other organizations, that if you play a player the first 12 minutes of a game Like, they were talking about this because Harden was insistent to Mike D'Antoni that he wants to play the first 12 minutes every game to get him in the rhythm, and he feels like he's out of rhythm if he doesn't do that. But all the studies show that if you play the first 12 minutes consecutively, that you get to a level of fatigue that you don't get it back at the end of the game. So you need to come – your best players actually need to come off the floor at the start in order to be rebooted by the end. And I think that's an interesting thing because in this – specific to this situation, because we would see Bradley Beal or John sometimes go, if not the entire first quarter, the majority of it, and then come right back at the start of the second quarter they needed to be paired with Brandon Jennings because they couldn't have both of those guys off the floor at the same time at any point, or they're dead.
In the playoffs, it was even more than that. There were points where the one guy who would stay the whole 12 minutes in the first quarter would start the second also.
Right, exactly.
He was going that. And I think to sort of the Game 7 being a microcosm of the season, it also reminded me of going all the way back to last offseason when I did sort of my, okay, what do I think the Wizards need most? And I think clearly the defense was the biggest issue overall for this team as the season progressed. But the thing I thought they needed the most was some sort of a perimeter player who could get his own and run the offense through when John and Brad sat.
Chandler?
that is definitely your boy. But they didn't even come close to that. I mean, right. Not to bring the Redskins into this, but like everybody's like, okay, well, if you get rid of Kirk Cousins, it's hard to find a quarterback. That's true. It is not hard to find a third guard. They couldn't do that at all this year. Trey Burke obviously didn't work. Marcus Thornton, they moved on from. That became a thing last night because otherwise Brooks doesn't go 44 and 45 minutes for those two guys. No matter how great they are, you could see at the end they didn't have enough, and the Celtics were able to rotate enough guys in and out. So the fact that they just could not, it's almost baffling to me that like when we look at it now, that they just could never figure it out. As we put Game 7 to rest, we start to move on. We talk to all these guys. Today we talked to all the starters, Bogdanovich, Oubre. Oubre and Todd was fun. I look forward to playing that sound on the podcast at some point. Brandon Jennings and so on.
Did we get Otto?
We did get Otto. You already forgot. It was that memorable.
Oh, no.
but we talked to Otto about his restricted free agency.
I must have been transcribing that.
I'm sure you were busy. But I was going to say, a lot of it was sort of perfunctory comments. We
too soon to tell.
We, you know, it still hurts. Who knows? Whatever. What stood out to you, though, of anything in particular?
Two things. One, the conversation with Oubre, as I have my longstanding, can't be that long. He's only been in the league 2 years. My reputation as being critical of him. But he said that he had an MRI last week on his right knee and that he told the doctors he didn't want to know the results, but he pretty much indicated that he anticipates having a procedure now that the season is over. Mm-hmm. And he even said, I'm going to not be playing basketball for a bit to let my knee heal. Mm. So I thought that was significant. That was that an actual piece of news. We knew he had a knee thing.
Because like I'm saying to Ava, like maybe I missed Brooke say something on the road. I didn't feel like it was like a thing. Like, I don't recall ever hearing one of these press conferences.
It was at the end of the regular season and came up during Atlanta. I had that in the back of my mind, but I had completely forgotten about it because one had brought it up. It wasn't an issue. We were all so
calf
strains.
In game five, I missed to some degree, I was surprised he didn't play yesterday. I understood why Brooks was only going to go with the guys he trusted, clearly, and he wasn't one of them. But in Game 5, he was one of the only two guys that actually seemed to show up. So I was a little surprised that he didn't play at all. But anyway, that aside, so Oubre.
Oubre, and the second one for me was Gortat.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be a fascinating summer for him. The Jan Mahimi injury situation is going to go from just influencing this past season to now throwing a major wrench in the summer. And that contract as a whole is kind of reverberating because they can't go into the summer thinking we can trust Jan to play 82 games, 80 games, and then throughout the playoffs the way Gortat does over and over and over. So if you're thinking about moving Gortat, the oldest player on the roster, someone who's, I wouldn't say in love with his current role as the team is constituted, if you're considering that in the summer, then you have the Mahimi concerns in the back of your head, which are grand, but you also have so much money invested in those two.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason Smith, you got out from under Nicholson, but now you have all those things mixed together. So what does that mean for Gortat by next fall?
I mean, at the end of the day, this is not new. This is not new thinking. How do you play two guys who are making essentially $28 million who can't play together? How do you justify that at a position in which the league is going away from?
Right.
So it
and neither of them are going to morph with the league. Neither have any chance of becoming that
and
type of player.
Gortat at least seemed to very well be aware of that. He was saying, sure, he was totally reading the tea leaves and saying, you know, he's one of the last true centers in the league, and he thinks that that is not just a dying position. He thinks it is a position that well deserves a little bit more respect, as he said.
Yeah, the flip side of all this, of course, is the Spurs, who keep playing two bigs together, and look where they are.
Well, they're the Spurs.
Without some key dudes. But yes, we've decided they're the outlier now because they keep playing two bigs and figure out a way to beat these spread out teams.
I respected Markieff Morris from the start of the year to the end of the year. He managed to find a way to drop an expletive in almost every conversation. It was tremendous.
Thank goodness for him.
Yeah, it was that was good.
I liked Scott Brooks' comment on him today. He said he mentioned Morris as one of the more surprising players. He was like, you know, you've heard the stories, you hear some things, guys have reputations, but I love, and he's always said that about Markieff, that I love coaching him. Like, that's Brooks' line, but I thought that was funny.
And that's why I brought that up to Markieff, that Brooks had sort of said that. And he goes, yeah, we just had my interview with him, and Brooks said that he thought I was an asshole. But yes, they clearly.
That's also two good personality summarizations for those two people. Yeah. Scott was honest as he can be in the media, but gently explained what he thought was going on. And then Markieff just said he thought I was an asshole.
And I don't remember who said it, but just to sort of tie it in with Morris and mentioned Oubre and even Otto. Somebody, I care who it was. They said, "What did you sort of learn from Brooks this year?" And they said that he was really patient.
Oh no, that was. Yeah, that was Gortat. I thought that was such an interesting quote. Yeah. He said he's patient, he really loses his cool, and then he said...
Gortat said something like he would have blown up multiple times.
Right, he said, but, you know, he was kind of dismissive. He said, but, you know, if you're judging coaches based on wins, he's got a lot of wins, so there's that.
But, like...
I don't know.
Before game seven, like the only thing I wrote was that the two reasons I thought the Wizards were in this spot. One, Wall and Beal stayed healthy. Obvious or not, that's the key. The other one was that Scott Brooks packed his patience, to use that tire cliche. He never seems
did
to get rattled.
That
for us? Donald Trump did. Oh. I just stole it from him.
Just checking.
But before game six, he's cracking jokes. He's the loosest dude in the room. I'm like, dude, you gotta...
No, he does that when he's nervous, though. He was so nervous at shoot-around. His hands were balled up in his shirt, I thought. He was.
Yeah.
I think he makes dad jokes when he's a little bit...
Maybe. and you're probably right.
Dad jokes.
Yeah. They were dad jokes.
That's the first time all season the phrase dad jokes has been...
Well, I wonder why.
...dropped on this podcast. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Right. Gotta get to those barriers. All right, so I promised I wouldn't keep Todd too long because he's claiming he hasn't slept. He's got to get his luggage and blah, blah, blah. We'll talk plenty more. I'm going to make Todd keep coming back even if he doesn't want to, but any... Final thoughts as we walk away from this, whatever you want to go to, anything that you feel like you need to tell the world about before we sign off?
No, I just I'm always amazed at the difference in narratives that such a few amount of points can make, right? Mm-hmm. And as we talked about prior, game two to me was the crucial game in the series. I asked Markieff about that last night, and he pointed to that as well. I thought the other guys kind of, they didn't really jump in on that line of thought, but Markieff Morris was one of those people. So either if you win that or you win last night, what is, as I just read a local column basically slamming the organization for having any pleasure in this past season.
Any particular site that ran that column?
not when anyone reads. I thought if they had won, what would you be saying? And it would be a 180 from what was discussed there and what I've heard discussed other places as well. And
if Game 7 was here, based on 11 games the home team won, so if game, and
right.
Granted, Boston earned Game 7, but I'm saying to slam it when it literally came down to who had home court.
Right, and I don't want to make excuses for the Wizards because they distinctly have holes that are abundantly clear that they knew before the season they were going to have and they never resolved, and yet they still reached this point. So the good and bad is certainly there. But so that's, I kind of come away with that. And again, backtrack to like, Kelly Olynyk has destroyed the Wizards narrative of there's an up and coming team, and maybe these are the guys who are set to challenge Cleveland once we finally learn that LeBron is not a cyborg and may actually age. Instead, it's too short, not enough, and oh, look, 1979, and throw out the last three of the last 4 years because this is who they are.
If Game 7 Brad takes Game 2 final shot,
yeah,
we're probably looking at talking about, am I driving to Cleveland right now?
I was going to say, I'm just glad that I don't have to go to Cleveland. I don't think I could handle the meeting of the two, I guess the saddest in what was once the saddest sports city. I'm so done with the saddest sports city.
It's such a ridiculous narrative.
I'm so ready to be over it.
I heard Steinberg.
I don't care if it's true. I don't care if it's
not
whatever.
True. I heard Steinberg wrote something about it. I need to
It's just not. You can't. It's not comparable to compare.
Well, you can't go to the playoffs all the time in all the sports and say you're the saddest city.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. I think Steinberg had the stat, like, over the last 2 years, the only city that had all four major teams win the division was this city.
Right.
That can't be sad. Sad is you have no chance.
And then DC United replied with a tweet of all their trophies, which, right. Congrats, DC.
I have been wondering, like, DC United, even like the Castles, whatever we all think. Like, they're like, hey,
the
hello.
Castles.
All right, hello. We've been winning everything. What are you talking about?
I love the Castles. I am sad that I wish I had gotten the chance to write the story about how all year the Wizards had been talking about how badly they wanted to reach the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, never once, I feel like, have they mentioned the finals. Or, you know, Scott Brooks will say every team wants to win championships, but it's like John Wall's been like Eastern Conference Finals the entire time. And I wish I had gotten to kind of
delve into that mentality a little bit. Well, they know well enough what's going to happen when they reach the Eastern Conference Finals. They know who's standing there. So, you know. And then they know who's in the West as well. So I'll give them credit for some common sense goal setting. But it's also very strange to hear a team say conference finals versus just flatly championships.
Although I guess if they were saying finals, we'd be calling them out for being completely silly and
So common sense goal setting.
Right.
And it's the next step for them. I mean, that's what we keep talking about. Is that we always see that in the NBA. You know, there's a lot of progressive round by round. We need to get through this hump and then this group and this team. And
you're saying it's a process?
It's a process.
Todd with the hinky comment.
Yeah, your boy.
he's looking good. I guess the last two things I'll say. One, you never know what's going to happen. And as good as it seems like the progression is when you have a 26 and a 23-year-old guards dominating the way they did for the most part, that's your cornerstone. Those are your cornerstone pieces. You look at your setup, that starting five, maybe they all come back, or at least, you know, the younger guys are all coming back most likely. But even though even with Boston today, who knows? I mean, Boston's about to get potentially the number one pick in the draft by the time you hear this podcast, and they're in position to sign a Gordon Hayward type or somebody like that. If they add those kinds of pieces, I don't know what the Wizards are going to be able to do too much outside of adding Otto. If they do make a trade for, say, Trey Gortat, maybe that gets them something back, but, you know, maybe a complimentary piece. So you don't know, you never know what's going to happen. And plus, you know, knock on wood for them, John and Brad did stay healthy this year. Mm-hmm. That's only the second time since they've both been in the league that they both played over 70 games. So there's that. The other thing that stood out, and again, to go back to the bench, as we're sitting here waiting for all the players to come out, I, as somebody who's going to have to figure out what to talk about for the next 4 months on here, I'm like, I'll take them all. And nobody else wanted anybody. And after the first, like, seven or eight guys, and even the PR was like, okay, well, here's what we have. We're bringing out these eight guys, the younger guys that already left. And I'm like, that sort of sums it up right there, right? If the Celtics were the ones doing this today, a lot more guys you're having to go through. And the fact that it was only like seven or eight guys, really, and, like, you know, let's be honest, when Mahimi and Bogdanovich are out there, the group cut in half. So it sort of just goes to show that ultimately the Wizards, the bench really was, even on the last exit interview day, it really sort of showed how the bench was just not up to snuff. And ultimately, that's probably what cost them for this year.
Yeah. Every time you talk about John and Brad not being there, you have to mention the bench, I think.
This is true. All right, Ava, you did a very good job.
Thank you. I hope it earns me a return ticket.
I don't know. Wow. We're gonna have to.
Long pause.
Well, HDK reviews all the podcasts, and if he gives you a thumbs up, you don't even know who that is.
Okay.
Do you?
No, I do not.
That's all right.
Please give me a thumbs up.
You do know who it is. You just don't know him by his alias.
That's fair.
Todd, appreciate it, man. We will talk soon. Thank you, guys. We're listening, and
happy
until next
season.
Well, for you, we're just going.
Happy off season.
I don't know. There's no off season here.
Wizards podcast locked on.
I don't know. We got report cards to do. We got to talk about the second round draft, free agency.
Report cards.
Well, you know, that's your problem. All right. Until next time. See you.
Deal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long bounce shot.